It's not uncommon for hundreds, sometimes millions, of people to leave their home countries and end up arriving in a very hostile place. Harvard history professor Sunil Amrith has been studying this, and this month he won a $625,000 MacArthur Genius Award for his work. Although Amrith's research focuses on migration in Southeast Asia in the 19th century, he says there are several lessons the U.S. can learn from this history. Professor Amrith, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about your work and exactly what you have looked at, migration from India to Southeast Asia primarily, mm-hmm. right? And the award is for the body of work you've done, but that focuses on that specifically. What's the message that you, if there is a singular message or thread there from that period of time and that pattern of migration that you find so fascinating?
One message is that it was vast. There was as much migration in Asia as there was across the Atlantic, as there was in other parts of the world. And the message is really that Asia as we know it today, including the Asia that we think of as economically dynamic and really increasingly powerful in the world, was in many ways shaped in that moment by the massive movement of people, especially from India and China to Southeast Asia, but also within these regions as well. And my main interest is both in how this is universal, in the sense that this is the same sort of process that's going on in other parts of the world, including here in North America, and also in what is specific to that kind of migration within Asia, the ways in which, in fact, it may be quite different from the kinds of migration which people here are more familiar with.
Mm-hmm. And give me an example of a current day migration pattern that you think is very similar to what you've studied from this time.
Very similar is the enormous migration of migrant workers from South Asia to the Middle East, to places like Dubai and the Qatar and Saudi Arabia in the present day. And that involves several million people every year. And that's very similar to the kind of migration I'm talking about, because it's often relatively short-term circulating migration. The people come and go. They go abroad for periods of a few years or even longer than that, but with the idea that they will return home.
Mm-hmm. And what does history tell us about lessons to be learned about what happens to communities in migration, both those that are left behind and those that folks go to?
One of the big lessons is really that migration affects a far larger number of people than those who are migrants themselves. And so one of the things that's very interesting from my work, which I think is very resonant in contemporary times, is that there were places in South India where one in every two or three working age men at any given time were abroad in Southeast Asia. And you can imagine the multiplier effect that has on local communities. And that multiplier effect was particularly significant because people were coming and going. It was not that people would disappear, never to be heard from again. In fact, it was much more common for people to maintain their family connections back home, to come back for periods of time. And that itself was an engine of migration. Once you have uncles or brothers or cousins abroad, and then by the 20th century also sisters and aunts and wives, people tended to then cluster in those destinations. Mm-hmm. And so one of the lessons is really that migration can become something of a self-perpetuating sort of cycle, that certain places, certain families, certain villages become very outward oriented. Mm-hmm. And I think one sees this in the world today. There are so many parts of the world where large numbers of people at any given time are overseas for work, temporarily or more permanently.
Mm-hmm. What about when the backdrop is something like what we're seeing right now in the United States, where there's animosity against outsiders? And of course, you know, what we're seeing in Myanmar, what do we know from history about what happens in those kinds of situations?
So unfortunately, there are many moments in history where this has happened. This has happened before. It's certainly hostility towards migration is a major theme in my work. One of the things I'm interested in exploring is what conditions allow for that hostility to emerge, to become a political force. And certainly the moment that most resembles our own, I think, is the 1930s. Not just the 1930s in Europe, which is a story everybody knows, but the 1930s in Asia, too. That was when you started to see, after a period of 30 or 40 years of massive expansion in migration, you see a backlash. You see a backlash, again, not dissimilar at a moment of economic crisis. You see a backlash against migration across Southeast Asia during the depression of the 1930s. And that was when, for the first time in Myanmar, for example, Burma as then was, there is a very sharp turn against Indian migration. Really, some of this has to do with fear and insecurity at a time of very rapid change and at a time of economic pressure on both migrant communities and host societies. And part of it has to do with new political ideologies. I mean, a lot of the ideologies of nationalism, which seem to be on the upsurge again in the world today, were very much a product of that moment in the early 20th century.
But what's happening in the U.S. right now, it's not economic pressure necessarily.
I think ideas are very powerful. Ideas which in the world today, of course, the media and social media in particular circulate with a rapidity which I don't think there's quite precedent for in the kind of in the time period that I work on. Ideas about others and strangers and the threats that they may pose to us, however we define that us. I mean, I do think that ideology is probably the main force at play in the United States today, but not just in the United States. Look at Myanmar.
Right.
Look at the Rohingya crisis there. So much of that is about the construction of the Rohingya as outsiders, as dangerous, as threatening. One sees traces of this in various historical moments of the past. I don't think one can ever reduce it to economic pressure or economic motivations.
And based on what you've studied, I know it's always hard to predict, but do you see, you know, really long-term damaging consequences from where we are in this country?
I do. I think the emboldening of that level of overt hostility to all sorts of communities and groups, migrants, some of them not migrants, will leave deep scars. I think will leave deep scars at the community level, but also at the national level, and indeed at the international level.
Let's talk about your award. What are you going to do? It's $625,000. What are you going to do with that?
I'm not going to go out and make any big purchases. I think some of this will feed into supporting the work that I'm already doing. It will make research travel easier. It will make it easier to get the kinds of support which make research easier. Some of it, I'm hoping, will really seed future projects, which I at the moment, I'm just finishing a book, and I'm nearly done writing it. So I think when I have finished that book, that will be a moment where I take stock.
Well, that's Harvard Professor Sunil Amrith, one of 24 winners of the 2017 MacArthur Genius Award. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And stay with us. Coming up, longtime Cambridge author Alice Hoffman brings us a story of witchcraft and romance. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.